you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
I've really gotten into podcasts since we started this. Did you know the number one podcast in The Good Place is Mozart and Jimi Hendrix talking about music? And the number one podcast in The Bad Place is Joseph Stalin recapping The Bachelor.
Hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today we'll be talking about chapters 27 and 28, the season 3 premiere, Everything is Bonzer, first aired on September 27th, 2018. But before we do, everything changes about this podcast with today's installment. Third things first, there will be spoilers. There will be spoilers, and there won't be spoilers. The guidelines we gave ourselves for season 1 and 2 were that we could discuss anything that had aired already somewhere. We will be talking about each specific episode of season 3, but we will try to avoid, or attempt to avoid, talking about what happens in future episodes. You heard in last week's episode of this podcast Mike Schur's admonition against my admonition to decide your own fandom, to watch or to not watch. This is unlike other fan podcasts for other shows. Those people don't know what's coming. My guests all know what happens, or most of it anyway. I know a lot, and I can't wait for you to see it. I have no idea how this is going to work, but I know that it will, because we're going to do it together. So, all that said, once again, today we're talking about chapters 27 and 28, the season 3 premiere, Everything is Bonzer, directed by Dean Holland, written by Jen Statsky, including guest cast Andrew Bering, Dominic Burgess, Matthew Foster, Keston John, Yaret Laura, Mike O'Malley, Lysandra Tina, Prudence Vinden, Jamie Williamson, Harvey Guillen, Ben Lawson, Josh Siegel, Eugene Cordero, and Adam Scott. Michael goes to Earth to save the four humans from their various accidental deaths. We see the last year in each of their lives between their near death and Michael illegally giving them a second nudge. Chidi asks a neuroscience professor, Simone, to study his brain and agrees to help Eleanor become a better person. Eleanor inspires Chidi to start a cross-departmental study on the effects of near-death experiences on ethical decision-making. Tahani's near-miss with her sister's statue causes her to travel to a Tibetan monastery to shed her desire for attention. She backslides, writing a book about the trip and creating a lifestyle brand, until Michael shows up as a hippie investor who loves her scam, which prompts Tahani to accept Chidi's invitation for his study. Michael saves Jason from the safe, inspiring Jason to attempt a series of dance competitions with his 60-person dance crew. He ultimately goes back to a life of petty crime until Michael poses as a talent scout and nudges Jason to join the study. Meanwhile, in The Bad Place, Sean and his demons hack the judge's system to see if the humans are getting better, and they realize Michael has also been cheating. Just when Michael and Janet think they've gotten the four together without the judge catching them, they realize that a demon, Trevor, has infiltrated the group. My guests today are co-writer of the episode Jen Statsky and Jamila Jamil, who plays Tahani. Jamila and Jen, welcome. Everything is Bonzer?
Hi.
Well done. That was quite a read.
Thank you.
Do you really need to lie impressive. Down? You're right. You need
I need a little break. Well, we'll be back after this totally real sponsor. Let's talk about general things to begin.
Sure.
First of all, did you have this experience? I had this experience. I missed these people.
Yeah.
No. Did you feel that at all?
Yeah, I felt very emotional watching it again.
Yeah.
I watched it on the way over and felt real
sadness. Watched it while you were driving.
You had it on your dashboard.
Yeah. One eye on the road.
Just like,
I live on the edge, people. I was being driven, obviously.
I love how you do stuff like that and you still insist. Anytime I bring up, like, not a lot of blue sky between Tahani and Jamila, you're like, how dare you?
No, I don't mind how dare I. I just think if I... You know, I haven't brushed my teeth in like 2 days. I feel like there's just like, don't look, but it's bad. You know, I don't bathe regularly.
I'm uncouth. You can't say that and then say don't look, right? I mean, that's an invitation.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a
and
tough.
And so, you know, I aspire to actually be more like Tahani because I feel like it would be a more hygienic and healthy life.
Mm-hmm. You know? Anyway, these characters, you missed them.
Yeah, I missed these characters. I'm so glad I talked about brushing my teeth. I really did. And also this season, we are much more separated, especially in this episode. So there's so much that I didn't get to see.
Right.
And so it really felt like I was just watching it as a fan. Mm-hmm. And I was giggling and clapping. And like I had my hands like clasped around my mouth. Is that right word? Yeah, that's fine. And it was just a very emotional experience. I feel so proud of this season. I'm so excited for everyone to see it.
I can't imagine how fans of the show that don't work on it must feel, because I missed them and I've read lots of these scripts and I've been on set for lots of it. We wrapped a month and a half ago, something like not that long ago. But watching this episode, I legitimately find myself thrilled to find out what happens with these folks and get back to it.
Yeah, and it's so funny that you say that because I was on, I mean, obviously I wrote it, but I was also on set, so seeing stuff shot, but then, yeah, you guys were kind of siphoned off, you know?
So
you're
abstract.
Very much so on your own story. You have, like, a scene with Ted, but so all the other people, you didn't really get to see what was happening with them. So, yeah, that's kind of cool that as a fan, you were like, oh, wow, Jason's doing an insane dance.
Even having read the scripts, you want to see which takes that they used and how it turned out. I can remember being in a table read about halfway through season two, and Morgan Sackett, the executive producer, one of the executive producers, had his sort of Mona Lisa smile. This one was particularly wry, and I was like, what's up? And he said, do you want me to tell you? And I said, yes. And he said, if there's a season three, it happens on Earth. When did you guys begin discussing that? How did that come up?
Man, that's a great question. We definitely knew, again, like Morgan saying it then, we knew pretty early on in like when we were trying to figure out season two, where we were going to go and what was going to happen, at some point very early on in talking about season two, the idea of going back to Earth came up. Mm-hmm. And I remember specifically one day Mike being like, I'm so excited about them going back to Earth. I just want to get to that. Like we knew that that was kind of at the end of the runway, and there was still obviously so much to deal with in season two, but we definitely pretty early on had that morsel of an idea of like, wait, what if they went back?
Right.
And so it's been in the works for a long time, so it's very satisfying to see it finally happen.
Jamila, when was it first presented to you?
I've only actually just found out today.
Oh, gosh.
The whole time.
You're not really paying attention to the scripts, are you?
I think we found out just before. I think there was a muttering of it the year before, but really about 3 weeks before we turned up to start filming, Mike sat each of us down and broke down the whole kind of, in a 2-hour speech that he gave individually to all of us.
Right.
He broke down the entire season. So this time it was the exact opposite of season one, where we weren't told anything, including our names, our characters, whether or not we would be fully nude for the whole season. Nobody knew.
Were you disappointed?
I was so sad. Because, you know, I just, as you know, I just big on getting this body out. Season three, we knew exactly what was going to happen. It was really, really exciting and such a new experience to be out and about in the world.
Jen, were there any changes in the writer's room between these seasons?
Writer-wise, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. We added a really great writer named Cassia Miller. She had been on Last Man on Earth.
Oh, great.
Great show. And also, like, really cool in that both, I think something we shared with Last Man on Earth, it's unfortunately not on the air anymore, is like a network comedy that is a cliffhanger show.
Yeah.
Like, really plot and story is such a big part of the DNA of both of those shows. So Cassie is great. She's super funny and smart and great. And then a stand-up named Ray Sani. She came from the stand-up world. She had written on The President Show back in New York.
Oh, great, yeah.
Which is great. And so, yeah, it was this was, I think, our biggest writer's room year. I think we had like 13 or 14 people. I remember you coming up and just being mortified at how many disgusting writer bodies were crammed into a small room.
That is not the nature of my disgust.
I read your face. I read your face. I know what it was.
No, it was.
You have resting disgust face.
I have resting I'm not welcome in this room face. That's how I enter.
Are you
every
English?
I'm Scottish.
An English trait.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. That's what you were reading.
Okay,
not
got
that
it.
There were so many.
Got it.
And I felt like I was interrupting because Mike was like, oh, here's Mark. Let me briefly tell him what we have until episode 11 of season 3.
Right. Yeah.
So it was simultaneously a ton of information. And also, I felt like I was not invited to this dinner. And
you're always invited. You're
and
always
they're not going to eat the soup
always
until
invited.
I do it. Let's get into the episode a little bit. We open on this mysterious, weird bridge, the outest outskirt of the nether realms of the afterlife. And there is a doorman played by Mike O'Malley.
The doorman.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
This show is, as we've said, the smartest, dumbest show. And to give such high stakes to a key made with the very first atoms created in the universe, and it can't be duplicated, and then to make it so mundane that it's printed on the key like we've all seen every day.
Yep.
Do not duplicate.
Yep.
Do you remember whose joke that was?
Oh, my gosh. I believe do not duplicate was Mike's joke.
Okay.
And then I'm pretty sure the frog keychain was Matt Murray's joke, I want to say. Though that is what I'm remembering. And if I'm wrong, I'll have an angry Joe Mandy texting me.
We are at a weird impasse. This is the first place in this new generation of The Good Place, the podcast, where I want to ask about the significance of frogs and I don't want to ask about the significance of frogs. Like,
right.
If it pays off or not. Callback, if it, yeah. So
I won't say anything. All I'll say is like, yeah, just enjoy the frog joke for being
for
a frog joke in this
however
episode.
Long it may last.
Yeah. Yeah. Live in the moment.
Go ahead. I was just going to say I was so starstruck when I saw Mike O'Malley.
Is that right?
Yeah, fully starstruck. I love him. We get the best guest stars on this show.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's too much. I don't even know how I recovered from season 2 with Maya Rudolph. I don't know how I made it through.
I know, it's still a kind of a dream, right?
Yeah, I was sure I'd be murdered shortly afterwards. Yeah. I was like, this is it. This is, I've peaked, and now it's over, and goodbye.
And he does such an amazing job of this episode of being so low,
so flat. Yeah.
And we knew, because that was the direction Dean gave him for sure, and when we wrote it, that's the intention. Like, be as flat as you can, because then that's going to make the frog joke pay off so much funnier, and he did such a great job with it.
Let's hear from one of our sponsors.
When the Duchess of Hertfordshire, Margaret Cromwell Everton Smythe, is jilted by her betrothed, the Duke of Cornchester, she moves in with a clumsy spinster named Deirdre Splatt. Notable episodes include Leftovers for Deirdre, Margaret gives Deirdre her old shoe, the one where Deirdre eats a painting, Deirdre dates a house cat, Deirdre is mistaken for a potato, Deirdre versus the loo, Deirdre forgets her pants, the chaise and the toilet, and poor people are amusing. As the theme song says, Deirdre and Margaret, they go together like baked beans and diamonds. Binge this classic series today.
So Michael saves everyone. He saves Eleanor from the shopping carts and the truck. He saves Chidi from the air conditioner. He saves Jason from the Swanson Safe Company safe and Tahani from the falling statue. He was obviously dressed as Karl Lagerfeld for that, right? I mean, that's the obvious reference, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably the reference, yeah.
Sure, I'll take that,
to me, right?
Yeah.
It's also an interesting fact about that scene is that that was shot season two.
Halfway through season two, that was shot. So I
was
going
to ask about that.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have set up that statue scene again. You would have shot that
a year ago. Yeah. We basically, it was a thing where it was like, and this is again to the credit of Mike and Morgan are always so good about like forward thinking, being like, if we're going to be on that set on that day, we should grab this.
But that's from a year from now.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
I mean, that's got to be one of the longest leaps of any of these that they've done. Like,
yeah. So that was what, 204 Team Cockroach, mm-hmm. We see Tahani's death.
That's nuts.
It's pretty crazy.
That they knew that they would want.
That they might
Michael
want.
Going back, that they might want.
Yeah.
But that is, you know, it's an advantage we have in our schedule of that we just try to get, before we start shooting, we in the writer's room try to get as far ahead as we can. Like, I think this year for season 3, we had at least drafts of 9 or 10 of the 13 before we started shooting. Mm-hmm. And that just, it allows us to do stuff like that, which ultimately is so helpful.
That's just crazy.
It was the longest secret I've ever had to keep.
You did great.
Alternative
you did
version
great.
Of that.
Is the same true of Jason? Did you restage the safe scene?
But yes. So with Chidi and Jason, those were shot. But season one, we find out how Chidi died, and we also find out how Jason died. So in season one writing, we had not come up with this idea yet. Tahani was kind of the only character we saved till season two to reveal how she died. And so Jason and Chidi, we both had to go back and reshoot the scene on the sidewalk where Chidi is arguing with his friend and then or trying to decide on what bar to go to, and then the air conditioner, he gets crushed, or in this version gets pushed out of the way.
Yeah.
And then Jason, yes, we also had to go back to the Mexican restaurant and shoot in the parking lot.
So those things were restaged.
Those things were restaged for the shooting this episode. The only death saving thing we didn't have to restage was Tahani's.
Because the brilliance of you guys and Mike knew a year ago that you were going to maybe need that, right. Might need that.
It wasn't explained to me why we were doing it. I wasn't told. I was completely kept in the dark.
But imagine how brilliant we'd seem if we had known season one and we hadn't had to reshoot any of the Chidi and Jason stuff.
But I think it's credit to you guys that you write this not having a clean, like, blueprint of everything that's going to happen.
Yeah, it'd be cool if we did.
Yeah, it might be easier.
It's much less stressful.
It'd be much less scary, yeah.
It's daunting to talk about this season three premiere because it's almost a series premiere. I mean, mm-hmm. We're learning, you know, we're
totally
meeting these people all over again. I'd be remiss, though, if I didn't point out the banner on a blueberry muffin cart, "We crumb from a land down under."
Sure.
Is that who I think it is?
What is crazy is it actually isn't Megan.
Really?
Wow.
It isn't Megan. It's
so it's catching.
Yeah.
The disease is spreading.
Oh, no. Are we safe?
No one's safe. Yeah. It's actually Cord Jefferson.
Was it Cord?
It was Cord. It was there. Ian Phillips came in one day and was like, "We need a signage for the muffin cart." And so we're all pitching. And obviously, when this happens, we all go, "Well, Megan's got it. She'll handle this."
She's been
and
born.
I think we're all pitching, and then we actually ended up going with one of Cord's. But
was Megan okay when that happened?
She's furious. She's going to ruin Cord.
Oh, she's already going through
Cord's
so much
trouble. Yeah.
She's going
through a lot. Losing two Emmys. Cord gets a pun in the show. It's a nightmare for Megan.
Jim Lee, you did an international sophisticate 582 questions kind of thing.
My favorite play on the Vogue, 73,000 questions or whatever they do.
Is the number 582 significant?
I'm okay with saying that I think is just a joke.
Okay. It's just an excessive number.
Yes, so we in the writer's room became obsessed, as Jamila says, those Vogue 72 questions. We became, is it 72 or 73?
73. Oh, God, I don't know.
Doesn't matter. I've now 582 is in my brain. But we became obsessed with watching these celebrity. Have you seen them?
I've seen a couple, and they're so staged that they make me furious.
So in the
they're the
room,
opposite of candid.
Yes, it's so funny. And the fake trying to pretend it's off the cuff and candid.
Kills me. Yeah.
It kills me dead. Mortifying.
Yeah, but I can't stop watching. I cannot look away from the accident.
They're addictive. Yeah. So we were like, oh, yes, please, we have to do this with Tahani. It's so Tahani. And it turned out awesome.
This might be the purest distillation of a Tahani name drop, though, because it's a misdirect where they say, "Who is the most famous person in your phone?" And you sort of deflect and say, "It's not about that."
Yeah.
The Dalai Lama texted me that.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the perfectest version.
It really is such a perfect Tahani joke because it's like she's trying so, and especially with where she goes with this, the whole get out of the spotlight, she's trying so hard to pretend to be earnest and above it all, but she's not at all.
No.
She can't do it.
Yeah. No.
I mean, she is...
A shirt.
Bag. Yes.
Bleep that.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. There's so much in this episode. I love that Jason proposes to the police officer and calls her Kay, because her name, I think the name tag says
Kay Ramirez.
And he inadvertently confesses. But then we see, throughout this episode, we find Michael and Janet monitoring the ticker tapes of what's happening back on Earth, and it's not going well. This is a very interesting Janet, though. It's a new Janet. It's a very human Janet.
Yeah.
it's the humanist Janet, I think, that we've seen today.
She's kind
right?
of mothering Michael.
Right.
Yeah. At the beginning of yeah. this episode. Yeah. I really enjoyed their dynamic shift because it's always felt like he was her dad and her baby. And despite the dialogue that then occurs, her,
right.
her mannerisms with him and her general way is she's looking after him, which I think is a really
right.
nice.
And he's trying to push the envelope and keep cheating, and she's really trying to rein him in. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's really interesting. I mean, just always with Janet across the three seasons, it's just she's getting more and more, you know, mm-hmm. human as we go. And so pretty much every episode, unless it's a flashback, Janet's more human than ever when you see her.
There's even a little bit of fear there. Like, she's going, now, Michael, don't forget the judge. Who's the judge? Like, there are stakes
yeah.
to Janet.
Yeah, yeah.
Janet didn't have stakes before.
Exactly. She's internalizing, like, now his goal and the group's goal is her goal, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is really cool because, that again, like you said, that's not where she started from. And now she's part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
We flash back, Michael is going to nudgy-nudge these people. So we flash back to season two. We see Eleanor in the bar, and then we, you know, follow her to Chidi's office in Australia. You've written the joke that the two biggest exports from Arizona are racist sheriffs and HPV.
That's right.
Are those the meanest jokes you wrote, or were there worse ones that you decided not to use?
I would say meanest, but also there's truth to them, right?
Okay.
They don't ring false when you hear it, mm-hmm. right? You're like,
oh, no,
yeah.
I think everybody knows. I think Joe Arpaio knows.
Yeah, he knows.
Yeah.
Hopefully. I'm sure he's a huge fan of the show.
We get a little bit of explanation about Chidi's languages
yes.
and accent. Is there more of that coming, I feel like Mike has said? Or is this the...
This is kind of...
Okay.
I think this is kind of our main...
I'm not trying to trap you. I just...
This was kind of... It was something we were aware of that in the pilot, he says... The pilot of the show, he says, I'm speaking, what you're hearing is English, but I'm actually speaking French.
French, right.
And so we always knew going forward that that was a loose end to tie up.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was kind of our way of explaining what the deal is with that. And then Eleanor, of course, has a very Eleanor response to mm-hmm. it.
We learn that Zonkatronic is Chloe's word for crazy. Is Bonzer a Kardashian word? Or that's like an Aussie
no,
word.
No, that's
right?
an Aussie word. That's an Aussie word, which kind of colloquially means like good, great, you know, so it's
I think about it in terms of like
awesome.
Waves, like good waves surfing.
Like a Bonzer, like you yeah. hit a... You, got a Bonzer wave.
I think so.
Okay.
Why do the writers know what the Kardashians' words are?
That, I gotta be honest, that's actually just a joke. That's not actually a Kardashian word.
Oh, is that true?
Yes. That is just...
She knows the actual...
I was gonna say, she knows the canon.
I will say, I wrote this whole Kardashian joke because I have a pretty extensive Kardashian knowledge. Yes, and this is not part of their canon.
So Chidi... We see his life. We see, first of all, it was very charming to see Ted riding a bike and trying
yes.
to yell at the same time because it was 90% solid and there was just a little bit of like acting while riding a bike.
Totally.
Like there's a little bit of, that was kind of great and fun to see.
Yeah.
Chidi's still Chidi. You know, like we haven't gone back in time. I mean, we've gone back in time, but it's a different timeline. I don't know how any of you keep this straight. but his takeaway is that he... you know, shouldn't be more decisive. It's that he shouldn't use Freon and air conditioning because it's bad for the environment. His friend tells him that his brain is broken. And I do love that in this revisited timeline, he's still working on that tome, that 3,600-page thesis.
Yep, yep. You're basically going back as if he had never been crushed by that air conditioner. So he's still the old Chidi, hasn't made any of the progress or gotten out of his insane brain.
And he's still Chidi in the sense that he can't choose a chair when he's talking to Simone, played by Kirby Howell-Baptiste.
Of that opening shot where he's sitting there straddling each buttock on an armchair of each chair was unbelievable. I laughed so much when I saw that.
That's joke enough, right? But then you have him move to the one at left and in the middle of his own dialogue, he goes, nope.
Yep.
Like,
yeah, and that was a Dean pitch on set, and it was such a funny, smart addition that, he was like, can you just not even break stride with the line? Can you sit down and then be like, nope, and move to the next one? And
Will
nailed it so perfectly.
Oh, good heavens. So the thing that gets the four humans back together is Chidi's experiment. He decides to put together an experiment measuring the effects of near-death experiences on ethical decision-making. Did you meet with philosophers on this subject?
Kind of with all things that we explore in the show, we try to have some background in terms of a philosopher we talk to, a professor. You know, Todd May has been invaluable to the show. And so for this season, going into season three, Mike kind of emailed all the writers. He said, I read this book, Moral Tribes, by Joshua Green, which is a really interesting, so much smarter than I am, book written by a person so much smarter than I am that it was hard to understand, but I got through it. And he is a philosopher and a neuroscientist. And so he kind of, the character of Simone, you know, has some of that in there. We were interested in, okay, Chidi, it comes from, you know, a moral philosophy standpoint. What about someone who's a neuroscientist, who loves being a neuroscientist, who loves looking at the human brain and having really, like, you know, it's in the premiere when she's like, yeah, you guys ponder one question your whole careers.
Right.
Science is all about getting answers and moving on to the next thing. And so definitely that study kind of came from a mixture of us reading Moral Tribes, talking to Joshua Green, exploring that angle to things that we hadn't really before. And so that was kind of, and then also just the fact that morality, you know, it's such a, when you're discussing the concept of like death and that we know our lives are only so long, how does that affect how we treat other people? That's always been a part of the show. And so that kind of came to a head. It's like, oh, four people, they've had near-death experiences. How does that affect how they behave? And so that was kind of all rolled into what if it was a study?
So his brain is broken. They're going to put him in an MRI. Let's listen to a clip. Full episodes of The Good Place are available on NBC.com and the NBC app.
Okay, I'm all set.
I'm just going to ask you some basic questions, Chidi. What is 1 + 1?
2.
What color is the sky?
Blue.
What color are Simone's eyes?
Brown. What?
If you could take Simone anywhere on a date, where would you take her?
Sorry, is this part of the experiment?
It is now, yes. Please answer the question. And keep in mind, we can see your brain. Next question. You are into Simone.
That's not a question.
So you agree. It's a fact. Next question's for Simone. Simone, are you annoyed at Chidi for waiting so long to ask you out?
Yes, I am.
Chidi, same question for you. Are you annoyed at yourself for waiting so long to ask out Simone? I mean, I'm annoyed with you, and I've only known you 3 weeks.
Yes, I am obviously very annoyed with myself. Can I get out now?
No, you can't. It'll ruin the science. There's only one question left, and you gotta ask it, bud.
Simone, would you like to have dinner with me?
Wow, that is highly inappropriate. I'm just kidding. Yes, I would. Thank you for asking.
No, you can't. It'll ruin the science. Jen, that's world-class rom-com.
It's very rom-com, yeah.
But I mean, it's perfect.
Well, thank you. It's very, I mean, it's all Kristen and Kirby and Will do such a good job in that scene. And it's what's crazy is this scene and kind of this storyline where Eleanor pushes Chidi towards Simone wasn't really in our, I believe when we outlined and kind of broke the episodes, that wasn't really part of it. There was an earlier version of this episode where when we checked in with Chidi and he has his kind of epiphany, your brain is broken, etc. He and the Simone and Chidi relationship kind of, he did that on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And then in rewriting and rebreaking and talking about the episode, like the premiere, you know, I think we, every episode in various forms goes through a lot of rewriting and rebreaking and talking about it. And every episode is different. But we definitely, this episode, because it's the premiere, because we had so much to catch up with, there was we're working on it a really long time. And that kind of developed. We changed the story to have it be more of an Eleanor Chidi story where she is the one who pushes him to ask her out. And it just, yeah, I love that scene, is my favorite scene, I think, in this episode. And I'm so glad we kept working on it because we wouldn't have gotten it.
I love that scene.
It's great.
I didn't like seeing Eleanor push.
I
felt I'd like, it was fine in the read through because it all feels very abstract. But when I saw it, I felt angry and disappointed. I wanted to break stuff because I just didn't feel right. I didn't like it. It was very well performed and executed. I can understand why it's happening, but I feel territorial of them as a couple.
Yeah.
I've become like a real psycho fan of the show.
Oh yeah, I mean that's real. And I think that when you look at this episode, there's a moment. I think some of it might be a little bit of Kristen Bell knowing the previous seasons of the show, but it's definitely Eleanor just being territorial when they're walking down the park, mm-hmm. the sidewalk in the park or what have you, and Simone comes up. At first, there's a little bit of like, oh, hold up, like, who's this? And then she softens and goes, hey, dork, she's into you. You guys should get
totally.
Together. I promise I won't get to you together. Cut to.
Totally.
So you're into
Chidi. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
But you can feel a little, I don't know, a hint, a whisper, an echo of a past life of her going, I'm jealous of this person and I don't know why yet.
Well, it's interesting you say that because one thing we were very cautious of was we did not want this to turn into a story of a love triangle.
Sure.
Of two women fighting over a guy.
Because why, right?
Because why? Because I think it's been done, pretty sure.
I don't know, has it?
I don't think so, actually.
Yeah.
But that was also avoided in season one between Tahani.
Totally, exactly,
and
exactly.
Like Mike yeah. and the writers, they all veer away from
yeah,
the cliche.
Yeah, yeah. One of, and I think you would maybe agree, for me as a woman who has other female friends, I'm like, no, my girlfriends and I, we're not fighting over men. That's mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen.
Then
sorry.
You're doing it wrong.
I know your experience is different, right? So it's interesting. I think, of course, there is always this supernatural element to our show, which is like, oh, these people's brains have been erased, but is there any, you know, we know what they've been through. But it was important to us, and Kristen really nailed it and got it right away, that she's Chidi's friend and she's right. genuinely helping him. And even though she's only known him 3 weeks, Eleanor has no boundaries with people. So she's going to do that. So I think it's interesting for us. I really, and Mike agreed and everyone agreed that it we didn't want it to feel like any kind of two women fighting over a guy, basically.
Right. And you address it so well because in the next scene, I think Janet and Michael, there's concern that now there's this jam car of a third party and that yeah. they're not going to get together. And I think it's Janet that says there were plenty of reboots where Chidi and Eleanor weren't soulmates and he still agreed to help her, which of course he does in this, given the nudge from Michael. You have Janet calling the judge mommy, which is, it feels a little inside writer's room maybe. And also
oh, yeah,
trying on Michael as dad.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's still just Janet, I think, evolving and having being like, oh, yeah, relationships. People have moms and dads. Who's my mom? Who's my dad?
And I feel like as a reminder of the timeline of the previous two seasons, we do see Sean and company in the Situation Room.
Yep.
Going back to things. The song that made it, when I say put something on that's deeply terrible.
Yeah.
To put us in the mood, you played Richard Marx's Right Here Waiting For You. I've forgotten what song you played on set that broke me completely. Do you remember that?
God, what song was it? I'm trying to
Dean
remember
Dean thought it
too.
Might be Blues Traveler something.
Oh, it was Run Around by Blues Traveler.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
So I think it's okay to say this. Basically what it is when they have to clear these songs for the episodes,
right.
The person giving the rights to the song has to be okay with saying, hey, is it cool to say this is a song literal demons use to psych themselves up because
right.
it's so bad.
Same thing with Puddle of Mud and Grandma
exactly,
Got Run Over by a
exactly.
Reindeer.
Exactly.
Right?
So I think that we're always dealing with what's funny and also who's going to be down for the joke. And I think from what I've heard, Richard Marx is a very funny, gets comedy, and is totally down for his music to be made fun of, which is cool.
Sean goes on a bit of a cocooning spree and others join, I suppose, Vicky, wherever she is, somewhere in a cocoon. I do love that you have Chidi thanking Eleanor for bullying him into asking out Simone, kind of thing. Like, that
yeah.
seems like a really baseline dynamic for those two.
It's totally a baseline dynamic. Eleanor is...
yeah,
Eleanor, but she's all action, you know? Chidi's obviously his greatest flaw is that he overthought everything and never took action. And Eleanor is such a like, all right, man, let's do this. What's the plan? And so they make each other great in that way. And unfortunately, she's made him great in a way that is, or fortunately, however you want to look at it. I'm looking at Jamila, who's devastated yeah. by this couple being broken up.
Yeah.
Don't fork. Don't look at me. Don't forking.
No, but
don't
it's
forking.
That. It's so interesting to hear you say that because, like, you know, we all writing it, we're like, wow, how are people? I'm very protective of the Eleanor Chidi relationship. You know, like I love them together, so. It's interesting, like people's reaction to this premiere. I'm really interested in how they're going to feel about it.
Am I wrong in saying that apart from obviously like towards the end, I guess, of season two, this is palpably the warmest I've seen Eleanor so far. She's the most like she feels
yeah.
like she's still pushy, but she's warm and affectionate and doing
yeah.
something for
well,
other people.
Well,
like she's a giver.
Yeah, this is the first time you've seen her not like a cage, like with her back against the wall, season mm-hmm. one, season two.
Like a caged
animal. I was going to say like a caged animal, and I was like, that's not exactly the right metaphor.
Yeah.
Let me try something else. But, you know, she, in season one, she's so scared she's going to get caught.
Her antenna is that she's going to get screwed.
Exactly. So she's, all her instincts are saying, fight, 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 self-preserve, self-preserve. So I think, you know, she's suspicious of Tahani when she first meets her. And that was something that was really cool for us to explore in them being on Earth.
This one's totally different, mm.
Yeah,
right?
Totally different.
Meet in different
yeah,
circumstances.
Yeah.
Was that weird playing, meeting your character, meeting Kristen's character for the first time? when you, the actor, knows that you've been together for several years.
Yeah. And I feel like we played it in slightly different ways on set to kind of see what would work later. We tried a variation. I'm really glad they went with the kind of warm, open
Take. And in that first scene when you guys meet, it's immediate, like, she's like, no, I'm not that into Camilla. And you're super happy and your reaction of it is so, so funny.
That was so genuine and dear. For real.
But yeah, you guys, she has no reason to feel anything but like, oh, cool, here's this really interesting British woman who I've never met anyone like before. Mm-hmm. But she's not worried about getting caught. She doesn't think you think you're better than her. And that's bad in the good place. So
also, I'm not the only person in a village that has an English accent.
Exactly.
Out of choice.
Exactly. So it's really cool to, it's, I can't think of any other show where you get to explore relationships from so many different angles over and over again with characters. It was very fun to write.
That's also a fun scene to, when we flash back to your near death, to Tahani's near death, it's fun to see Tahani out of control going, who was it that saved me? It was a man, I think. They're like, no, it was Camilla. And they're like, no, it was a man, I think.
I love that scene so much. I love the writing of that so much. And then how everyone just starts chanting, Camilla, 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 and how broken I had to look. That was really fun. That was a really fun scene to shoot. And we almost took out Ted in that scene because there's like one of the takes we both missed the mat. Almost definitely my fault.
Oh, you mean you almost killed real life actor Eminem and Ted Danson.
So I almost, and he just had a knee operation. So we had to be really careful with him. And I think like, I lack spatial awareness. I'm taking the full blame for this. You know, I am Bambi on ice. And so I think I missed the crash point. And I think therefore I took him down with me. And just, I was like Rose on the Titanic. Like, I think I took up the whole crash mat when there was space for two, Rose. There was space for two. And so, Ted landed on the ground. There was like a couple of minutes where we were like, have I rebroken Ted Danson's knee? Yeah, it's very stressful. It's nice to see it all work out.
Tahani decides to find herself again and goes to a Buddhist monastery. Did you want to talk about that?
Yes. The week before filming, because I've had two seasons now where Ted Danson, who is several decades older than me, runs rings around me. And his energy is just like beyond, way beyond the whatever I could even contemplate for myself. So I was like, you know what? I'm tired every year and we do these long hours and I'm sick of seeing someone 40 years older than me just run rings around me. I'm tired of it. So I thought I'm going to start taking up sports so I can be more energetic.
Oh boy.
So I decided to try sports for the first time in 20 years, 1 week before filming. That sport was tennis. Tennis seemed... No, so why is every... Now I know that everyone's like, oh, you idiot. I thought tennis seemed very civilized. I associated it with champagne and strawberries and cream. You know, it just seemed
again,
like...
nothing like Tahani. Nothing like Tahani.
Yeah, you know. But I haven't played since I was 12 because when I was 12, I played and I went to swing the racket and the racket, I just never stopped. You know, you just like stop your arm. But I brought my arm all the way back round and smashed myself in the face and broke my nose. So I never played tennis again for 20 years until a week before the show. Played it, was in a warm-up round with my unbearably competitive boyfriend who even though
James Blunt
who just kept on spinning the ball and I ended up because I'm also competitive tried to meet him and impress him and just ended up falling over my ankle to the point where it just went way the other way that it was supposed to in nature and I heard it snap from 5 foot 10 inches in the air like loud it sounded like a and it was I'd snapped like a ligament and damaged it so badly that I could not walk again without some sort of aid for about 2 months. So it was fun for me that the first thing I had the first day of filming all on my own and it was all day and it was up a mountain that I had to
Where
keep.
Where were you?
Malibu, I believe. Yeah.
Is that a hill then?
Yeah.
I've exaggerated with the mountain.
It was
mountainous.
The place we shot the monster was this really interesting property in Malibu that someone owned and we shot there. And there was a lot of like dirt hills that we were walking up. And you Dean Holland, our director, they were on crutches.
Yeah.
I made him do everything that I had to do. I was like, if I'm doing this and I'm risking my ankle, you're risking yours. And we had to keep going up and down these different
It was an interesting first day
of
season 3 shooting.
Yeah, I was in agony. For a couple of weeks. But Tahani is wearing flats in season 3, and that is my bad. And I'm sorry to all of my fashion followers who feel let down by this decision. Shame on me.
Let's listen to another clip. You can find full episodes of The Good Place Thursdays, 8, 7 Central on NBC.
You should be selling whatever crap you can think of, because these people will buy it.
That is quite enough. And how dare you insinuate that I'm not authentic? I finished signing your headshots. Oh, not now.
Miss Al-Jamil, it's okay. You and I are the same. I love what you're doing here. You get to be rich and famous and not have to do any of the work of helping people.
But I am helping people. You need to go right now.
Suit yourself. Look, if you change your mind, I'm online. Just Google crystals that prevent erectile dysfunction.
I'm sorry, but Ms. Al-Jamil doesn't have time to participate in an ethical study at some random university. If you want to meet her, you can sign up for the Get Out of the Spotlight cruise with special guests Deepak Chopra and will.i.am.
Hello? This is Jahani Al-Jamil.
Oh, hi. I didn't think I'd actually get you.
My name is Chidi Anagonye, and I'm doing an academic study on near-death experiences and ethical decision-making.
I read an article about you.
Will it help people? That's all I want to know. Will this help people?
Yes, I think so. I mean, that's the goal.
Send me the info. I'll be there tomorrow morning.
Will it help people? That's all I want to know. Maybe there's no blue sky between Tahani and Jamila, because that sounds like you to me.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
That and mouthing off on Twitter. It's a sort of combination of the two. I lack Tahani's grace and class when I try to help people. That is a thing that we have learned about me in my private life.
Also about dental health. That's such a wonderful scene because, you know, she's become this major brand, Tahani has.
Yeah.
And Michael shames her into realizing it, that she's, you know, in the course of trying to be humble and shed fame and things material, she's made a business out of it.
Totally.
Yeah.
That moment where you see her say, and that's why I decided to get out of the spotlight, and we come in and she's on a stage in front of hundreds of people on her book tour. So, so funny. I love the writing of this show so much. This is my favorite season. This is my favorite season.
As I said, I can't wait for viewers to see this season.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Special. It's special. I also love that this show is so ambitious. Like, you got an auditorium and lit it and put, I don't know, 100 extras, 100 background actors into that scene to shoot a 2-second TED Talk.
All of whom had a copy of my book. I have a photograph that I took of all of them holding it out.
Yeah, so the props department made...
Oh, yeah, props department. They're so amazing. Yeah. Oh, yeah, every extra had a copy of the book. Yeah.
And No, I was going to say really pay attention to the book launch that you can see, because there's these different amazing photo setups that I had to do photo shoots for of just different takes of me pretending essentially to be Gwyneth Paltrow, which is really fun, and also soz Gwyneth, but it was worth it.
This is because we're doing this so quickly with the tight turnaround, because we're doing these, you know, next to live, near live. I haven't zoomed in on every back of every book of every magazine. I'm sure there are Easter eggy jokes that I'm haven't gotten on this episode yet.
I forget if there's anything on the actual book jacket. Again, our props department, like Gay and everyone, is so good that I guarantee there are jokes on that. But like when Tahani's giving the TED Talk, there's a quote from I believe it's, I wrote it, I should know. It's basically like, this book is some of the best writing I've ever seen. It's made me decide to quit writing completely. And then the next quote is ditto, Cormac McCarthy.
I also like the use of the name Charles Brainman.
Oh my God. Yeah. That is one of, I think, all of the writers, one of our favorite running jokes in this episode is Michael's fake names when he goes and meets everyone. It's so good. Gordon Indigo for you.
Gordon Indigo is my favorite. what a creep.
Charles Brainman. And we're coming up on Zach Pizzazz.
Zach Pizzazz.
So Jason meets Michael on a pier. Yeah. He's throwing rocks and says, are these your rocks? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. And one thing, production design-wise, art department-wise, the pier that Jason's on feels a lot like the bridge that Michael walks out to meet the doorman on.
Ooh,
like the lights are sort of similar, the spacing of the lights.
I love this.
It's got to be deliberate.
Film student read into the...
I don't know. It felt... It,
no,
it struck
you're right.
A visual chord.
You're right. All I remember from that is that it was so cold that night. That's what I remember. But yes, an artistic reading is that it's kind of a nice bookend to where we start the episode.
You've done another nice misdirect here. Jason's had a rough year. His year started about a year ago. And he, you know, we see everything that's gone wrong in his life, and he decides, he says aloud, I need to change my life. He then sees a poster that says, change your life. And he zeroes in on the completely wrong poster, and it's about dance competitions.
Yeah, the Swamp Stomp.
I mean, it's such a Jason Mendoza.
It's so Jason, yeah.
You've also mentioned the Carmen Electra Auditorium in the Smith & Wesson Performing Arts Center and ATV Repair Shop. Is this a statement on gun violence?
Yeah, you nailed it. It's our statement. I'm glad you read into the subtext of this episode. If you take one thing away from this episode. No, I think we had so many alts, and I think Manny read a bunch of them, and I wish we could have used them all, but it was like, it was always Smith & Wesson, but then it was like ATV Repair Shop. I think I pitched him Sex Toy Depot. just so many stupid Florida jokes that I wish we could do all of them.
Getting to see him dance, because Manny is such an extraordinary
dancer. It's really, and I really hope that there's some.
Because Manny Jacinto is a real life hip hop superstar.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. When we were casting the show, Manny's audition was, I'm sure people have talked about, so good, so incredible. His take on Jason was so unique and special, and it was like, yes, this has to be Jason.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, we Googled him. We're like, who is this guy? We've never seen him. And so many like hip hop dance videos, and we were like, he's an incredible dancer in addition to being a great actor.
Which is so funny for Jason. That's so perfect. His brain works so beautifully in one way, but yes, doesn't work at all in any of the other important ways.
Totally.
Yeah,
so.
He's incredible. That dance scene was longer. I hope there's a longer cut.
Yes, I was going to say, I hope that on NBC or an extended cut or something, we see, because they did, you know, Manny and the rest of those guys were in rehearsals for like a whole day and a half before that, learning this dance, and it's pretty intricate. Like, so even what we see is amazing, but there's a longer version that's even.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, he's
it's
great.
So incredible.
They
he's
get.
So
I feel like they get disqualified because they've got lots of. They've got 40 people, and it was meant to be 8.
Yeah,
something.
I think Jason's not a great rule reader.
Sure.
He's not. He's not doing
generally
the,
a good reader.
Yeah, not a great reader.
Not big on reading.
We meet Donkey Doug. Have we met Donkey Doug before?
We've never met Donkey Doug.
We've heard
Donkey Doug. I believe Jason had. His girlfriend Sheila, he framed her for boogie board theft
That's
or something.
Right.
So Donkey Doug has been mentioned as one of Jason's kind of, other than Pillboy, one of his best friends. But we've never seen him until
now. We've never seen him until now. He says, you know, you're my boy, but I can't handle it. And he bugs out. Little Peanut also bugs out. And,
and we've mentioned Peanut. So in my mind, Lil Peanut is Peanut's daughter. Yeah.
That's lovely.
A wonderful rapper name.
Yeah, Lil Peanut. Good. Yeah. Yeah.
We hear about the license plate Got MILF, which is
so lovely.
So Florida.
I would 100%, if I ever learned how to drive, would 100% make that and will make that. I vow on air to make that my number plate.
Yeah. If you're driving around LA, you see Got MILF, you know it's Jamila.
So this plan doesn't work out. They don't win any of these contests. That's how he was going to fund his trip or get his life back on track. We see Pillboy, Eugene Cordero, and Jason sharing a drink at a bar. I was half expecting Michael to show up as Sam Malone again behind that bar to be the Cyrano, to be the
Deus
Ex Machina there.
No, what I kind of love about the Jason part of this premiere is that when Michael first comes to him, I think Michael, and we talked about this in the writer's room, and there was also even kind of a scene at one point that got cut, but Michael, I think, is very much so underestimating Jason. He's left him for last. He's like, this will be easy. I can get this guy to Australia. I'm just going to say, hey, dance crew. And then when Jason says no, you see in the scene, and Ted acts it really beautifully, he's taken aback. He's like, the line is like, but you heard my name. I'm Zach Pizzazz. and Michael takes a step back and then really actually listens to Jason and has this nice moment where he connects with him and is like, yeah, I get it. I used to run with a crew who had different values and morals than I did, and then I had to change. And they have it's that's I love that scene because they both did such a great job.
It's a great job. I also love Jason going like, I guess I could go to Atlantis. It's Australia.
Yes.
He has a giant realization that there might be more to life than amateur street dancing.
Yeah.
I do like that Michael has to cover himself and say that his crew was the demons, too.
Yeah.
Well, Jason totally knows that group.
Right, right.
Turns out to be a different group.
They all died when someone brought a hammerhead shark into their hot tub.
Into their hot tub.
Yeah.
A lot of good Florida
a lot of stuff in this episode.
Every time we have to, like, we went to Comic-Con over the summer, yeah, and we asked if anyone was there from Florida, and I made it a point to apologize to all of them, anyone from Jacksonville.
Yeah. People, yeah. I guess people from Arizona are like, well, we don't have, like, fans of the show from Arizona are like, we don't have it as bad as Florida fans.
Cause... Also, the French really get it from us in this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We see Michael return. He sees the doorman once again. He's brought him, in this case, a travel mug, I guess, right? For his antimatter.
Yep.
Travel mug's got a frog on it.
Yeah.
Like, it's such an endearing and weird, dorky thing that you see Michael Malley's character of the doorman be like, oh, boy.
It's,
oh, gosh.
It's so good. It was like...
It's still subtle.
Yeah, it's subtle, but it's so... It's one of those scenes you write and you're like, I have this idea. Like, we all had the idea in our head of how he'd play it, and then it's... He did it exactly the way we hoped, and it's so funny. He's so good doing it. And his, like... When he goes, oh, this guy's a jumper, you can tell. His voice kind of goes up, and it's great. It's great.
We then see Janet and Michael and the judge. The judge is checking in. The stakes are very high. Janet's panicky. Michael's panicky. We find out the judge is super into CSI or NCIS rather, mm-hmm, and Mark Harmon.
Yeah.
But they get by with it. Like they sneak her away from the ticker tapes and they get her out of the room.
They get away with it.
Yeah.
You're also in this episode and you're wonderful in this episode.
Oh,
I really, really loved your performance. I feel like this is the most vile you've been so far.
It's getting darker,
in any
right?
of the seasons. Yeah, no, for sure.
I tell Glenn to straight up shut up.
Yeah. I hope we release a supercut because every shut up, Glenn, you did was so funny. And Dean and I were cracking up every time. And I would love to see a supercut of shut up, Glenn.
Thank you. That's one of those things that as an improviser, especially, you're like, well, they got that. And they got it in the close-up,
totally.
So
yes.
I'm going to do it differently.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you put periods in it with, like, right. Shut up.
Yes. The different versions of it were very impressive.
That's very
really,
sweet.
I would really genuinely love that.
Oh,
I would love to
I'm gonna,
that. That would be my ringtone.
We gotta release that, yeah. Shut up, Glenn.
Also, how adorable is Glenn? How adorable is Josh Siegel as Glenn?
Is so good.
He's just so lovable. Even when he's, like, trying to suck up from inside the cocoon, that's one of my favorite things.
It's so funny.
Good one, boss, or whatever he
says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty lovely. Everything is going great. Michael's done it. The exposition is laid. This is all happening. Everything is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Until we hear this.
So, this is our MRI machine. Oh, don't touch that. Each of you will get a chance in here eventually. Hopefully none of you is claustrophobic.
Claustrophobic? Who would ever be scared of Santa Claus? Oh, the Jewish.
You from Florida?
Jacksonville.
Yeah.
That should be fine for me. It's roughly the same size as Nicole Kidman's cryogenic anti-aging chamber, and I've never had a problem in there. So.
I'll be okay, too. Kind of reminds me of the home tanning booth I lost my virginity in.
Wow, I cannot wait to take a look at these three brains.
Oh, forgot to mention, there's one more person who will be joining us. Seems like a really interesting guy. He was almost run over by a train a few months ago, heard about the study, emailed me last night.
This doesn't make any sense. They're all there. What's going on? Oh, no.
What is it?
Something bad, Janet. Something very dark. And evil.
Oh, yes. Come on in. Everyone, this is Trevor.
Hey, guys. It is so great to meet you.
Uh-oh. Trevor.
Mm-hmm.
Is anyone creepier than Adam Scott in this show?
I think what makes it so creepy is that it's low-key Adam Scott. He's not being creepy here, which makes it worse.
Yeah, he's being like dork Adam Scott, which is really creepy to when you know what's truly going on.
It appears that everything's working out. Michael's succeeded. He's gotten these people within the same four walls, mm-hmm. and that was always the recipe within the 802 reboots to get them to work together to get to be good people. They're going to go through the MRI, and Simone asks if anyone's claustrophobic. Jason says, claustrophobic, who could be scared of Santa? Who got fired for writing that joke?
I wrote it, and I very much so remember that Mike did not want to
do it. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, it's like, it's right there.
I really loved it. I thought it was really clever and nuanced and funny.
Do you have a word for this? Do you have a category for this? It's on par with, like, we have to cheat off a cheaty. Oh, that's why his name is
totally,
cheaty.
Yeah.
Like, it's on that level.
Yeah, it's on that level of stupid for Jason, where it's like, wow, you're really just taking everything at, like, face value, man. You think, like, but it's also one of those jokes, I think, that sometimes in a tape, like, people hear it and think maybe it's, like, edgier than it is. Like, it's not actually it's just a joke about Jason being
I thought it was very edgy.
I was so surprised. I remember writing it and I was like, Mike's gonna cut this, and I was so surprised that it's still in the episode.
it's right on the edge. It's a different, it's a cousin of the restaurant puns for me.
In that you don't like
that. I'm not sure how it makes me feel.
A second cousin.
Yes.
Okay.
Amram and I are here
love,
for you, man.
Though, and this is another dig at the American South, is that upon hearing that, Eleanor goes, you from Florida?
Yeah.
Like, something about you says Florida. I'm from Arizona, so I kind
of
know.
Yeah, yeah. They're of the same. They get each other.
Of every, the ilk.
Yeah.
What's that?
Of the ilk.
Of the ilk.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing because it's... we're reminded of this sort of sleeper faction of The Bad Place that we'd sort of forgotten about. At least I had. I'd read this script months ago and had forgotten that he's the cliffhanger of this.
Yeah.
Like, we're about to see, we're kind of at that, okay, here we go thing. And then he walks in and, you know, this is going to get difficult.
Yeah, it's good. I'm pretty satisfied with this as a cliffhanger, because I think it is a good level, hopefully, that when you're watching the episode, you see you, Sean, be like, Michael pushed his luck, and that allowed him to see, like, oh, Michael's going back down to Earth. What have we got here?
Right.
And that's where Michael kind of screws himself. That allows you to be like, great, we'll send down one of our worst that we've got. And that's, you know, but I think it's far enough away that you kind of almost do forget. But then when it happens, you're like, oh, of course that was going to happen. You know, it's always weird with, like, twists like that. You don't want it to be so out of nowhere that it feels just random and not earned. But you don't want it to be so telegraphed that people are like, yeah, of course I knew that was going to happen.
Right.
So because I think if it was you showing up, Sean, it would have been a little bit like, oh, of course I knew that was going to happen.
Right. He was right on their heels.
Yeah, exactly. So I hope that it hits a good middle ground of that.
Oh, it certainly does. It's shocking and it's scary. It's one of those things where you're like, oh, I can't wait to see what happens in this new timeline. And then you're like, oh, this is an instant thorn.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be so difficult.
And hopefully it's rewarding, too, I think, as a fan of the show, that you're like, whoa, I haven't seen Trevor in so many episodes. Like, it pays off in that way.
Also, that thousand-yard stare smile that he does, even when he's being low-key, even if he's playing a nerd, I've never seen... And he looked into each of our eyes in every single take, and I froze from the inside out.
Yeah, it's so creepy. Yeah. It's so good.
There's a wonderful theme running through this, which is that we are not alone. We are not in this alone. We need one another. Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose that's been the theme for everything, but with these people beginning again as strangers on Earth, it feels heightened to me. Like, it feels like the teamwork aspect of it.
Yeah, there's a certain chemistry these four people have together, that there's something intangible about it, that when they get together, they make each other better and they work in a really specific way. And it's kind of like a very nice sentiment that I think, is even more heightened the fact that, they were in such different parts of the world and had to be brought together for this to work. But now...
Yeah. I think that's kind of why people are drawn to our show, because in a time where we are being constantly manipulated to separate and distrust each other and not work together, this message of, like, with unity we would be able to to defeat
and with
evil.
Unity with people who are different than you are.
Exactly.
You know,
people who are so different.
So different. Yeah.
And people who are from another place, but also people who trigger you, people who are annoying. This encourages empathy, the exact opposite of what we're encouraged to think about in, you know, the news or on social media. And I think that there's something, that there's clearly a hunger out there for that level of empathy that people look towards in our show.
Yeah, it's nice.
We are not
just
in
a
this
joke
alone.
I wrote. No, sorry, I didn't
beautiful.
Mean to get so serious.
Martin,
we are not in this alone. All we have is one another. In a sense, okay, here we go.
Yeah,
it's on.
Jen Statsky, what's good?
Okay, this is a weird one.
Yeah.
I don't know why
I'm
this
ready.
Popped into my brain today. Kind of this great actress who's on our show, Darcy Carden. This is so weird. Zoe Saldana's husband, whose name I don't even know. If you can look it up if you want. This is why he's good. It's because I recently learned that Zoe Saldana's husband took her last name when they got married.
Oh.
And I think that is really cool and badass. And yeah. I was like, that rules.
More, I like that.
I'm all about, I don't know if you know me, I'm all about smashing the patriarchy. You
yeah,
get it.
Yeah,
you
yeah, get I
it.
Get it. Yeah.
So, but that's cool, right?
It is.
Let's change it. We don't need to, there's a lot of women who don't take their husband's names. Great. Or, you know, but why can't a man take a woman's last name?
Why can't he? Mm-hmm. Why can't Marco Perego take Zoe Saldana's
yes,
last name?
That's his name. Great. Perfect. I hope, what if he listens? What if he's like a huge fan of our show?
Yeah.
He should come and guest.
He should.
Jamila, what's good?
Season 3 of The Good Place. The Ooh. Whole thing. The yeah. whole thing is good.
I'm and excited. Are you excited?
No, I'm genuinely, I cannot wait. This is my favorite season. This is where the writers know us the best. We know the writers the best. We know each other the best. This just felt, it felt honestly, I don't even feel afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to say it and put myself out there. This is like, it was just palpably, there was so much chemistry. It was so much fun to film. All of them have obviously been fun to film, but this was with no fear. It was just the best experience. And the writing is absurd. I bow down to all of the writers on this show. So I don't care if I sound like a kiss ash. It really is. It's the best. And spooning.
I'm having a memory of the season 3 wrap party from a month or so ago. Mike Schur got up and gave a nice toast and a thank you to the cast and crew and everyone involved in The Good Place, at the end of which he said, see you next year. And I was standing next to David Miner, one of mm-hmm. the executive producers and one of the partners at my management company. And Mike said, see you next year. And I whipped around and said, oh. And he said, that's not a pickup. That's not a pickup. And I said, sounded like. And he said, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. So here's hoping. I can't wait for people to see season 3. This is an unusual half hour of American network television.
It's a weird one, and it gets progressively weirder. Definitely
so weird.
Tops, yeah.
Yeah.
Not to sound like I've drank the Kool-Aid too much, but I think this season truly tops itself in weirdness.
Oh, it's so weird that I frequently wondered what's wrong with all of you. Like, frequently. It's brilliant. I love it so much.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Thank you for listening. Now go do something good. We did it.
Wow, we did it.
We didn't spoil season 3 either.
I was, oh God, it's so scary.
So scary.
So
I feel
scary.
Like I'm walking a tightrope the whole time.
Thank you, go for it.
Janet, what have we learned today?
A good place was the place inside of us all along that was good.
Oh, Janet, have you been sneaking magnets again?
You've been sneaking magnets.
Oh, this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts and all major podcasting platforms, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Written by Lizzie Pace.
That was Lizzie Pace. Mm. Music composed by David Schwartz.
I love you, Michael.
Oh, Janet.